all you fish enthusiasts out there. Whether you're an avid angler or just curious about fish, we'd like to welcome you to Fish of the Week, your audio almanac of all the fish. It's Monday, August 7th, 2023, and we're on a week-by-week tour of fish across the country with guests from all walks of life. I'm Katrina Liebeck with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska.
And I'm Guy Ero, and this week we're heading back up to Alaska to talk about Yukon River Chinook salmon.
Awesome. And I'm very pleased to introduce our guest, Kinsey Englishu. She's Gwich'in and also an Arctic Youth Ambassador. And Kinsey, I'd love if you could introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, of course. My name is Mackenzie Englishu. I'm 20 years old. I'm Gwich'in Gwich'in. My community is Gwich'in Jay, located on the Porcupine and Yukon River in interior Alaska in the Yukon Flats.
So for this episode, we're really hoping you can help elevate an Indigenous perspective about the Yukon River and its Chinook salmon. So we'd love if you could just start by helping to ground us and take us to their Yukon River so you can imagine what it's like to be there, what the river's like, just kind of what this place is all about.
Oh yeah, the Yukon River is just beautiful. It's home. And during the summer, up to 7 years ago, everybody would be out there fishing and everybody would have their fish nets out, their boats out. They would be at fish camp. And everybody had a different job at fish camp. People were making fish nets or they were bringing the fish up from the bank. And then there were jobs like cutting the fish and hanging the fish and smoking the fish. And everybody had their own job. But the thing about cutting fish is that you would have to eventually get there. Like you would have all these other jobs first until you get to cut fish. And then it was like this honor you had.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Why is that the best position? Why is that the highest tier?
Oh, cutting fish, that's the highest like honor or skill you can get because you have to do it over time. And if you cut a fish, you have to respect it by cutting it right.
Okay.
Yeah. So oftentimes it's our elders cutting the fish because they know how to do it the best.
I know at our house when we get salmon, like our kids aren't cutting yet because you want to get like every little piece.
Oh, so yeah.
Yeah. When you get a salmon, I think, yeah, I always, if my, the first cut I make of the season, I'm like, oh man, I'm going to mess this up. But yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When you're talking about respecting the fish, is it all just about making sure you get the most meat off of that animal as possible? Or is there more to it than that?
There's more to it than just the meat. It's a spiritual experience. That fish gave its life to you to help feed you and your family. So it is important the way you cut it because you don't want to disrespect how it gave itself to you. You have to respect it by cutting it good and taking care of it really good right away. And the more you respect an animal, the more animals will want to come to you.
Okay. This is something that I don't know that we think about as much as we should down here in the lower 48. Could you just provide some more examples of like what things do you do to respect the fish when you're cutting it versus examples of things that would be disrespectful?
The ways you would like respect a fish is like cutting it nicely, making sure like you don't get any like rough cuts on there or ruin the meat. And then using every part of the fish. That's a huge one because like the fish gave itself to you. So you shouldn't dispose over like anything that you can't use. And then use it to your full ability. And then another way to like even respect the fish is like, you know, after you use the meat or the eggs or the fish head, there are still those like salmon bones in there. You could use those salmon bones to make jewelry. So like they'll be kind of like beads almost.
Oh.
You could use like the fish spine. And so you can make necklaces out of those or you could like make earrings. And then you could also use the ribs and you could tack it down. That fish gave its life to you. So you should respect it and like just make sure you use it to your full ability.
Don't waste that life.
Thank you.
That's great. I think that's great advice for anybody, anywhere who's harvesting.
Oh, yeah. And that doesn't even just go for salmon. That should go for like any animal you get. Like if we get a caribou, we use the hair, we use the skin, we use the meat, we use the bones, we make games or clothing or eat. And same with moose or beaver, like anything.
That's great.
So we know there's 5 species of salmon in Alaska. I understand that Katrina reached out to you. She gave you the choice of what fish to talk about. And you chose Chinook salmon. Why that one in particular?
I think Chinook salmon or king salmon, it was one of my main foods. It was one of my people's main foods. We would survive off of moose, caribou, and salmon. And I've been doing a lot of work on the salmon especially in the last couple of years, because the Yukon salmon fishing was cut off. So we're not allowed to fish on the Yukon anymore as Indigenous people who's always survived on it. But they do keep commercial fishing open up at the mouths of our river.
Yeah, you've kind of mentioned this fish in the past tense. You mentioned 7 years ago. What are folks feeling along the river? What is this loss like?
Yeah, some people started to harvest like pike and trout and stuff, but it's really just not the same. From back when, like 10 years ago, and from way before that, forever before this too, is like the fish would come up and everybody would be out on that river, everybody. And we would spend the entire summer out in fish camp. But now that we have no fish, there's nobody on the rivers. It's not as busy anymore. Nobody's at fish camp. Our fish camps are growing willows, so they're becoming not used. And I actually just called my grandpa, Sonny Jonas, from Gwichaje, just a couple days ago. I was like asking how his summer was going. And he was like, I'm fishing, but there ain't no fish.
Yeah, that's really sad. I would really like to know just more about what fish camp is like. I think a lot of people aren't familiar with that term. I mean, there's this big process. You're harvesting the fish. You finally get to the cutting. But what does it smell like? What's the whole scene? And just what's it like to be there?
Oh, fish camp. It's how do I explain this? It's where we belong. You get that sense. You would go to this fish camp and you would just smell fish everywhere and everybody would be out there, multiple families. It would just be like a cabin on the bank somewhere and you would have to travel from your village on boat to fish camp and you would stay there all summer and you would just stay there and get fish and process fish and smoke fish and you would see smoked fish hanging everywhere and we would go there to like prepare for the winter, to fill our freezers for the winter.
You come in as a novice and you start lower on the chain and you work your way up. With not being able to fish now, what are you seeing in kids who are younger? Are they not getting that same kind of experience that they would have learning these skills? And is that going to be lost? What's the projection for that?
Actually, I'm the last one in my family to be able to cut fish. Like, I have 10 siblings. I'm the third oldest on my mom's side. And then I'm the second youngest on my dad's side. I was able to cut fish, but now that the salmon fishing is cut down, nobody is going to go to fish camp and spend all that money to get there if we can't get fish. So a lot of our kids during the summer would be usually busy at fish camp and just working hard all summer. But now since fishing isn't really around, our kids aren't getting that traditional knowledge about salmon anymore.
Man, I guess, I mean, just trying to remember what things were like and imagine what it's like when the fish were there. What is it like to cut fish? Like, who taught you? And take us through the process. Like, you've got a Chinook salmon. How big is it? What does it look like? How are you actually cutting this thing up and preparing it to put it away for the winter?
Oh, okay. So the last time I went fishing was with grandma and we were at the bridge. And you would pull the fish out of the fish nets into the boat and there would be a bunch of fish on the bottom of the boat and you would bring it onto the bank and you would start bringing the fish from the boat to the bank and then bringing up to the table and then you would cut it and you got to cut it very carefully. So you would cut it down the, I'm going to ask my mom what the word for that is. Mom, what do you call it when you cut the fish right there?
It's a belly.
Yeah, you cut the belly of the fish.
Yeah, okay. What's the color where you guys are at in the river? What color are they?
They're super red when they get to us. We have really rich fish.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So awesome. We're a little spoiled.
So you got the fatty, delicious ones.
Oh, yeah. Yep. The best.
So you cut the belly and then, yeah, what does the fillet look like? How do you cut it and hang it or whatever?
So we cut the belly and then you would take the guts out. And then usually there's, if it's a female salmon, they would have eggs. And you put the eggs in a bag and you save the eggs because we boil those and eat those as well. And you would save the fish head. You would cut the fish head off and you put those in a bag. The elders love fish head. It's kind of like a delicacy to give them as well. And so they make fish head soup and we would cut the red meat. So then it would be kind of like stripped, Mom.
Yeah.
It would be stripped.
You strip it with the skin still on.
And then
you gotta
strip
get your mom.
Yeah, yeah. And then you strip it with the skin still on. And then I could actually have her explain it a little bit better if you would like.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Kinsey's sitting in an office and her mom's right behind her. So we're going to have special guest, Kinsey's mom. Hi. Hello.
Hi.
What's your name?
My name is Nicole James. I'm Mackenzie's mother. from Gutchaje, also known as Fort Yukon.
Yeah.
My grandparents are Margaret and Scully James. And my paternal grandparents are Madeline and Stanley Jonas. My parents are Denise James and Sunny Jonas.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Well, we're hearing about cutting Chinook salmon. We'd love your perspective, too, on just kind of what these fish mean to you and help listeners get a feel for what it's like to be on the river and experience a healthy run of fish. And then we're trying to understand like what's happened and how things are today. But any perspective you'd like to share, we'd love to hear it.
Well, back, I guess, in my youth, we used to go to fish camp a lot. My great-great-grandfather, Art James, and my grandmother, Annie James, had a fish camp, and we would go there. And he would only have a few nets out, or maybe a couple nets and a fish wheel. And the king salmon will come in abundance. I meant there is no ending from cutting. And back then, the fish was huge. I meant they're probably half my size or bigger.
Oh, my gosh.
I was talking to my auntie, Shelly James, and she would tell me like how my great-grandpa, Shelly James, he would be like wrestling this fish that was big as him at the time over onto the bank. And she said she would just watch him and laugh because she didn't know if he would win or not half the time.
Yeah, they're big, slippery, powerful fish. I mean, these fish, like, mm-hmm. again, are migrating far distances. So I mm-hmm. imagine they got a big tail flip, right, to get their red so deep to bury their eggs. But yeah, very strong, powerful fish.
Yeah. Now is you can't find any kings. I mean, you'd be lucky to find a king in the Yukon.
Do you have anything to add to what Mackenzie was saying about cutting fish or just family tradition around smokehouses or what it's like to be there?
She pretty much said everything. We basically save everything. Besides the guts, we throw that back in the water once you cut it. There's different ways to make salmon strips. You could make them the long ways or the strips. Mm-hmm. Or you could take the meat off and just hang that up too, off of the strip. We also save the hearts and we fry those up. The eggs, traditionally, we save the skin to make boots, fish skin boots. Yeah. Oh, and they're also yummy to eat once you put it in the oven. It gets a nice crispy thing. Mackenzie did very good in explaining how to cut.
She did.
But it's the head first. You cut off the head first and then you cut the belly.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I ask more about these fish skin boots? I think of fish skin as being particularly kind of thin and fine. How do you go about making the boots? Are you just using it for the outer layer of, like, if you have a leather interior and then put this on the outside, or is it 100% fish skin?
All the way around, it's 100% fish skin, but it keeps your feet from not getting wet.
Amazing. That's awesome. Wow.
And it's just on the outside of your boots.
Okay. Okay. I'm trying to think back to season one. We had Joanne Bryant, who's also Gwich'in, and she talked about the grayling skin and some different uses for that. So that's really neat.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah. I work for Association of Interior Native Educators, and we have, I think, 9 teacher resource books and 11 curriculum books, and they're all traditional knowledge that was taught from our elders to our Alaska Native teachers to teach in class. And so we have fish skin boots, caribou. We have all kinds of curriculum, so, and we're hoping to get it into the school system.
Awesome. That's very good. Thank you.
One of the things that I like when we get people who are subsistence fishermen on the show to talk about is like the unique ways of catching fish that's different than the hook and line that we are usually talking with people about. And so I heard you mention what I think were gill nets earlier. Your mom talked about fish wheels. What are the different ways that you guys would catch these Chinook salmon?
So you would be on boat and you would have a few nets and you would throw out the net and then you would pull the net in and then you would get a bunch of salmon in that and pull them all into the boat and then do it again until you make it to the bank. Or mom, you want to talk about fish wheels?
Fish wheels are neat.
She's coming back.
Yeah. Welcome back, Mom.
She did a great explanation, but there's another way. We put like a milk jug or something, or something that holds air, and we set it from one end of like an eddy or something. We start it from there and bring it out with a boat and put a little buoy on it. And we can leave it there for a few hours and or a day and then go back and check it.
Is it weighted on the bottom to keep it down?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. What's the current like? Is the Yukon really pushing fast in your stretch of the river, or is it kind of slower moving?
It does go by fast. It's very strong. It'll pull you down in a heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, you got to be real careful on that river.
Yep. And it's very, like, colored, too, right? It's, like, kind of a soupy, kind of brownish color.
It's a cloudy brown. Yep.
And this is a big river, I think, for folks listening. I mean, this is our third biggest river behind the Mississippi and the Missouri. So this is, like you said, a powerful, very large river, just for folks who haven't seen it before.
Yes, but it's beautiful. Every time I see that river, I just want to go home.
Oh.
And so that's what I'm planning to do.
What are the fish wheels like? What do they look like and how do they work?
Fish wheels, they are motorized by the river current. The frame, you're going to get lots of birch. You want something light that's easy to float. And the wheel itself, it looks like an S, but there are cups in different directions that go around with the current. And then that just scoops up the fish. And then it slides into a catch box. And so, yeah, those used to be like overfill sometimes back in the day.
Oh, wow.
They got to be pretty big to be scooping Chinook salmon. How big are these?
The width would be about 9 feet.
Okay.
Maybe bigger. Could be bigger. Okay. And then the other way is about 20, maybe bigger than that. So they're pretty big. Dang. They're really big.
Okay. How long have you guys been using these wheels? Is that a more modern development or does that go way back?
It goes way back.
Okay.
Even before my time. They've been using it for many, many years.
Do you have any early memories of salmon that you can tell us?
One of my first memories with salmon is that I was raised up at Chandelier Lake. And this is this big 8 mile long lake that I had all to myself at the time. And I basically was raised at camp. But when I would come into Fairbanks, I would go see my great grandma, Margaret Miriam James Englishue. And first thing she would do is give me this big bag of fish strips. I'd eat the whole thing. It'd be just red and oily fish. And I'd love it. I'd be like, thank you, Grandma. Thank you. Masi cho.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's your favorite way to eat? Is that your favorite way? Or do you have another favorite recipe?
I love dry fish. Dry fish or jarred fish, jarred smoked fish. And I usually eat those with saltines. Sometimes with a little dill pickle. But nobody really eats it with dill pickle.
Yeah.
How do you guys, when you're drying the fish, keep the bugs off? Because I've been up there in Alaska in the summertime. And it seems like it's pretty buggy.
So when you're drying fish, you make fire. So there's like a smoke coming up.
Okay.
So it's like a smoked dry fish.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Katrina, you introduced Mackenzie as an Arctic Youth Ambassador. I'm curious, Mackenzie, what does that mean?
Oh, Arctic Youth Ambassadors is an amazing program that I got accepted into just last year. We have multiple funders like Fish and Wildlife, the Alaska Conservation Foundation, and more. And they send us on these trips to like speak about like how protecting the land and like climate change, anything that we're interested in, they support us. And I've been to Canada so far to talk about the salmon and to talk about salmon across borders. And and it's just a really amazing program that I love to be a part in, and I recommend it to every youth that wants to apply. In this last year of like really fighting for the salmon and speaking about the salmon at the Board of Fish in Canada and all these multiple spaces that I've been to, a big thing we need to do is that this salmon is like a multi-country fish. So it goes from the Bering Sea, and then it goes to the bottom of Alaska through the Aleutian Chains, and then it goes through the Yukon State and then Canada. While being in so many spaces, I see them call it like, oh, it's a state salmon. Now it's a federal salmon. Now it's a tribal salmon. Now it's a commercial salmon. Now it's Alaska salmon again. But it's all the same salmon, and they all have different plans for them.
Yeah, that's a lot of boundaries.
Oh, yeah. I think it's super important as... while trying to protect the salmon for our future generations, that we all have the same plan for them. And we all put our focus in protecting them.
How do you kind of view climate change, and what are some impacts, if any, that you guys are seeing?
I see a big impact where our waters are warming in the rivers. So if there is a 4-degree difference, our salmon could die in inland rivers. And I believe there's been a 2-degree change, and that's pretty bad, especially when our salmon start trying to spawn. Alaska's taking a big strike with it too, because like even our own indigenous people can't fish anymore. And I always wonder with that question is like, how much can we take before it's gone?
Yeah, that's a question we all got to grapple with.
Yeah.
What's your goal in terms of talking to folks about salmon? What would you like to see have happen as a result of communicating about your home and the river and the fish, that they're so valuable to y'all?
You know, we just really want to fish at home. Like while the commercial companies care for this multi-billion dollar business industry, we just want to just fill our freezers and be able to eat the salmon, because we've eaten it forever for time immemorial.
Mm-hmm.
We're not able to do so anymore. And like we've seen multiple like side effects, like our elders are more likely to get strokes, or are like, we don't have our vitamins like we're supposed to, like we feel sick now because we're not eating salmon.
What are you guys turning to just to eat? Because it sounded like this made up a substantial part of your diet before they got closed down. So what are you guys eating now?
Well, in my region in Gwich'aje, we're caribou clan. But the big thing about that is that we don't get caribou in our region anymore, because of their changing migratory patterns. And because we don't get fish either, that cut off 2/3 of our food supply.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah. So right now we are really relying on moose and like beaver, muskrat, geese, and multiple people have noticed that our moose populations are now going down because of we don't have salmon. And now most of our families are having to rely on moose. We're taking a big hit right now.
I'm just curious. I know the Yukon Flats region, we've got a national wildlife refuge there, and I know that's one of the spawning areas of Bering Cisco. Do you ever come across that species of fish, like a whitefish?
Yes, I have. And then multiple people eat it, but it's more eaten up in Arctic and Beanie Tai area.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Arctic Village and Beanie Tai.
Yeah. If you could have kind of your ideal future looking forward, what would you like to see for future generations when it comes to this fish and the place that you call home?
Especially with this work for salmon that I've been doing, I'm not completely sure if I'll get salmon back in my lifetime, but I want to make sure that we have salmon back for our future generations, because it's something that is a part of us. Like right now I should be out there on that river, but I can't because there's no fish. So what I'm doing instead is I'm fighting to get the fish back for my future kids or my future grandchildren and so on. It was a huge part of who we were. We spent like the entire summer and fall out there at fish camp. And I just really want to see salmon come back to our rivers and for the salmon to be healthy and to strive like they once did. Our elders really miss fish. They were raised on fish. They grew up on fish their whole lives. It was a big part of their lives, even before them, time immemorial for our people forever. Dinjinju, we the people. I do this work for fish because they miss it. They deserve to have fish, if anyone. Like, people will give me fish sometimes for the work I do. First thing I do is bring it to my elders because I don't need it right now. They do. We have some older elders, too. So we have people in their 90s, people in their 80s. And this is the first 5 years they've ever been out. Been without fish, and it hits home. It hits their hearts because fish is something that's in our hearts. I once heard someone say that fish is our Yukon gold. We don't care about the money, but fish is our gold.
Awesome. I think that's a great point to end on. Really appreciate you talking with us. And yeah, it was amazing to have your mom join us as well. We really appreciate her knowledge.
I'm happy I could help.
Yeah, this was great.
Thank you all for surprisingly inviting me. The word needs to get out. We need to save the salmon.
Okay, so get out there and enjoy all the fish, and let's hope the fatty king of the far north returns so that Mackenzie's ideal kind of future where these fish are available for future generations becomes a reality.
Yeah, awesome. Merci Cho, you guys. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Fish of the Week. My name is Katrina Liebeck, and my co-host is Guy Iro. Our production partner for the series is Citizen Race Car. Produced and story edited by Tasha A.F. Lemley. Production management by Gabriella Montekin. Post-production by Alex Brower. Fish of the Week is a production of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Alaska Regional Office of External Affairs. We honor, thank, and celebrate the whole community, individual tribes, states, our sister agencies, fish enthusiasts, scientists, and others who have elevated our understanding and love as people and professionals of all the fish.